Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the February 18th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Arthur School Board, discuss whether provide summer school by Nolan Morse. The Arcola School Board deliberated on whether to provide students with summer school or not during Wednesday night's meeting. It was mutually understood that summer school may provide multiple benefits to students who are in need of extra help, but possible staffing shortages may hinder their ability to offer the program. The board all agreed bringing up on paraprofessionals to teach summer school wouldn't be worth the resources, as it was believed students wouldn't gain enough from the lessons. Before making a final decision, a poll will be conducted throughout the schools to gather estimate of how many students would sign up and how many teachers would be willing to teach the courses. The current plan is to run a jumpstart program in July where students would attend classes Monday through Thursday for 2 weeks. Elementary principal Marisa Brewer announced plans to gear the 2027-28 kindergarten class toward more of a play-based education system. The major change will be requiring students to get a minimum 1 hour play per school day. Procedures regarding how that would be implemented were not discussed, but Brewer stated she would have more details at a later date. Brewer also revealed the elementary staff has chosen a new English literacy curriculum. The curriculum received 100% of the votes out of the two options, and Brewer will provide a detailed presentation to the board next meeting. The teacher position from the elementary's new K-3 pullout program will be posted. The program aims to create a self-contained classroom for students with learning disabilities to provide them with extra one-on-one assistance. The board estimated they will have 6 to 8 children in the class. The 2026-2027 school year calendar was approved, the only major change being high school graduation is now a week earlier. High school principal Nick Lindsay announced plans to incorporate student-led businesses into the school. Gathering inspiration from multiple surrounding districts who run similar programs, Lindsay stated some current ideas are to implement a coffee shop or a clothing brand. Lindsay also stated the majority of high school teachers are behind the idea and want to see it come to fruition. The next article from the Arcola City Council, pursue federal funding to rebuild key roads for industrial park. The City of Arcola announced its intent to apply for a community funding CPF project through the Office of Congresswoman Mary Miller, who represent Illinois' 15th Congressional District. The proposed project would fully reconstruct Egyptian Trail Road and Bob King Drive, which serve as vital connectors for the Arcola Industrial Park. The $1.25 million project aims to bring these roads up to modern 80,000-pound truck route standards, improving traffic safety flow and drainage for local industries and drivers alike. The city is committing a 20% local match, $250,000, to demonstrate its strong investment in the community's future. The Arcola Industrial Park is a driving force in the local economy, supporting more than 700 jobs across manufacturing, logistics, and warehousing. Businesses such as Herf Jones, Monahan Filaments, Dayton Freight, and Master Brand Cabinets Warehousing rely on these routes daily to move products, materials, and goods throughout the region. Arcola has always been proud of its hardworking industries and the people who make them thrive, said Mayor Jesus Garza. This project is about keeping our infrastructure strong so our businesses can continue to grow and support good jobs right here at home. We're incredibly appreciative of Congresswoman Miller's office for considering projects that strengthen communities like ours. Local industry leaders also recognize the importance of the project. John Monahan of Monahan Filaments shared, "The viability of this thoroughfare is vital to the health of all local businesses and the safety of the employees that transit on a daily basis. This project also aligns with the city's continuing effort in recent years to improve and expand essential infrastructure, ensuring long-term sustainability and economic opportunity for residents and the local industries alike. If the grant is awarded, construction could begin as soon as 2027, ensuring these critical industrial corridors continue to serve Arcola's businesses and workforce well into the future." The next article, Turning Blight into Beauty, Villa Grove's Aiden Henry Joins the U.S. Marines, by Nolan Morse. A story proves sometimes the soil of pain and misery blossoms into the most beautiful flowers. 10 years old, an age typically coupled with carefree joy and undisturbed childhood wonder, is the same age Villa Grove's Aiden Henry said he collapsed to his lowest. Living on the move with his mom for his first 10 years, Henry was never able to make any friends, just a passing face in countless classrooms, no place ever stuck for the young kid. He loved his mom, though, and despite all her imperfections and struggles, made it clear that she was an amazing person who loved her son. Then, out of the blue, Henry's father took over his custody, a man he barely knew and had only seen a couple of times in his life. He had no idea what was going on until 2 days later when he learned that his mother had passed away. the unfairness of life to take everything away from a child who already had so little, Henry was devastated beyond what words can describe. Moving from place to place he was loved in to a home he hated, things began to spiral downhill. Living in a house infested with rodents, roaches, and too little to eat, Henry began to rebel. Going down what he considered the worst possible path, a run-in with the law ensued. His exact words describe this time in his life, a serious turning point. During his freshman year, Henry moved in with his aunt and uncle and credits them with saving his life. Now living in Villa Grove, things once again completely changed, but this time for the better. Henry started to see his potential through his achievements and firmly decided to live a successful life despite his unsuccessful lineage. Witnessing his life finally improve, Henry began to get an insatiable desire for more. Henry wanted to push himself past limits most people only read about and squeeze out everything he could from life. To complete this and become the best possible version of himself, Henry decided he was going to join the Marines. Signing up in May 2025 with a PICAT score of 59, Henry has gotten only more excited about the journey ahead. Starting out in training 6 months ago, Henry ran a 10-15 mile and a half, completed 14 pull-ups, and held a plank for 2.40 minutes. Comparing those scores to now, Henry has blown himself out of the water. He improved his running time to 8:46, with a perfect score being 9 minutes. He held a plank for 3 minutes and 45 seconds, that being the perfect score exactly, and completed 19 pull-ups, one shy of perfection. Henry plans to stay active for 4 to 5 years, where he'll then switch to being in the reserves. Out of life, he hopes to make a career he loves while having a family he can support. A burning desire for greatness can lead to the most extraordinary accomplishment, no matter how those flames are started. For Aiden Henry, they started with pain and suffering and led him to undertaking his journey to one day become a U.S. Marine, a title Henry will hold with pride, knowing no one can take it away. The next article, Miss ALAH Pageant, February 21st at Penn Station. The 2026 Miss ALAH Pageant will be held this Saturday evening, February 21st at Penn Station in downtown Arthur. The pageant begins at 6 p.m. with the doors opening at 5:30. Those age 4 and under will be admitted for free. The current Little Miss LAAH, Caroline Fleming, will make her final appearance as 2025 Little Miss. She is the daughter of Mitch and Leslie of Atwood. She'll relinquish her title to one of 5 little girls. They are Alexandria Breckmeyer of Lovington, 4-year-old daughter of Caleb and Sierra Breckmeyer, Sydney Cherry of Atwood, 6-year-old daughter of Ryan and Paige Cherry, Arabella Ashworth from Arthur, 4-year-old daughter of Summer Butterick, Helena Benner of Atwood, 6-year-old daughter of Corey and Ashley Benner, and Aurora Barnes of Atwood, 5-year-old daughter of Chris Barnes and Alyssa Gustafson. Appearing for the last time as 2025 Junior Miss LAAH, Bentley Parsons, daughter of John and Angie Parsons of Atwood, will crown her successor to one of the following 5 young ladies. Contestants include Brianna Calvillo, 14, daughter of Luzmila Guzman of Arthur, Elizabeth Plank, 12, daughter of Lamar and Marliana Plank of Arthur, Kendry Carter, 14, daughter of J.J. and Erica Carter of Arthur, Ember Ailey, 11, daughter of Chad and Haley Ailey from Atwood, and Jalen Sanchez, 12, daughter of Tyler and Marchita Sanchez of Arthur. Reigning Miss LAAH, Maggie Benedict of Atwood, daughter of Jared and Christy Benedict, will pass her crown and title to one of 3 contestants. They are Brooklyn Peeler, 17, daughter of Jeffrey Peeler and Caitlin Schwass of Atwood, Addison Hopkins, 17, daughter of Mike Hopkins and Kimberly Kusick of Arthur, and Alyssa Davis, 16, daughter of Craig and Danielle Davis of Arthur. Emily McLean, 2020 and 2021 Miss LAAH, will serve as the MC for the evening. We'll move now to the obituaries. Gary Joseph Miller, 63, of Pasotum, passed away at 4:55 p.m. on Thursday, February 12, 2026, at his residence. Visitation was held Monday, February 16, at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Funeral services were held Tuesday morning, February 17, at the funeral home. Burial was in the Calvary Cemetery at Mattoon. Richard Thomas Gabbard, 59, of Atwood, passed away at 3:47 p.m. on Saturday, January 31, 2026, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Celebration of life services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, February 21, at the Southern Baptist Church in Arthur. Reverend Doug Davis will officiate. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service from 10 to 11 a.m. at the church. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Sandra Jo Sandy McDonald, 84, of Arthur, passed away at 5:37 a.m. on Tuesday, February 10, 2026, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Funeral services were held Friday, February 13, at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Pastor Danny Powell officiated. Burial was in the Arthur Cemetery. Visitation was held prior to the funeral funeral Friday at the funeral home. James Francis Jim Reimer, 89, of Shelbyville, passed away at 11:06 a.m. Saturday, February 7, 2026, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center. Massive Christian burial will be held Saturday, February 14th at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church, Shelbyville, with Father Paul Augustiniak as the celebrant. Visitation was Saturday at the church. Graveside services with military rites were Saturday in Arcola Township Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials made to the St. Jude Children's Hospital Research. Michael Mike W. Conlon, 81, of Auburn, formerly of Arthur, passed away Thursday, February 12, 2026 at HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield. The family will receive friends for visitation from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 18th at Ayersman and Calvert Funeral Home in Verdon. A funeral service will follow the visitation at 11 a.m. on Wednesday. Burial will follow services at Auburn Cemetery. Thomas Tucker Tuck Bowles, 72, of Lovington, formerly of Tuscola, passed away on Wednesday afternoon, January 28, 2026. Funeral services will be held at 12 noon, Friday, February 20th, at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola. Burial will follow in the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation will be held 2 hours prior to the service at the funeral home on Friday. The next article, One Historic Game, One Historic Gym. On Tuesday, February 10th, the Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond Knights boys basketball team held their final games in the old gym of the high school as a farewell before construction begins on the new school. Prior to the game, Doug Davis, longtime LAAH teacher, read the following that was prepared by LAAH Athletic Director Nathan Seal. Before we begin, we'd like to take a moment to recognize the significance of tonight's game. This will be the final basketball game played in this gymnasium, a building that has stood since 1937 and has been home to generations of student athletes, fans, and community members. For nearly 9 decades, these walls have witnessed unforgettable games, school events, pep rallies, concert, and countless memories that extend far beyond the scoreboard. This gym has been more than a building. It's been a gathering place, a tradition, and a source of pride for our school and our community. As we prepare to move forward with new construction of a new high school, we honor the past, the people, and the moments that made this place special. Thank you for being part of its final chapter, and now let's enjoy one last great game of basketball. After the game, all those present who participated in any event in the gym, including our opponents in the Heritage Hawks, were invited to come down and be in this picture. It's a small percentage of the thousands who have given part in innumerable activities that this old girl has been witness to. While it is sad they'll be gone, the memories will live on forever. Excited to see what is replacement and know new memories will be made at that facility, and we can only hope that it will last as long. The next article, Alan Roberts Fund taking applications for assistance. Jay Roberts has chosen to honor the life of her son, U.S. Marine Corporal Alan C. Roberts, by providing annual financial support to an individual or group serving youth in the Arcola community in an effort to promote growth and leadership among young people. The Alan Roberts Fund has been established with the Arcola Foundation. Alan Roberts, 2004 Arcola High School graduate, was killed near El Asad, Iraq on November 27, 2007, while serving to Operation Iraqi Freedom. Roberts had served in the Marines since November 2004 and earned the Iraq Campaign Medal, Sea Service Deployment Ribbon, Global War on Terrorism Expedition Medal, Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, and National Defense Medal for his service. Robert, the son of Jay Strader Roberts and Ron Roberts, was actively involved in Arcola High School, where he was a member of both the football and basketball teams and was also involved with the yearbook staff, AFS, and the drama club. He was a member of Arcola Boy Scouts Troop 88 and Walnut Grove Christian Church. At the time of his death, Robert was organizing donations from his home church and his friends at the Marine Corps Air Station in Yuma, Arizona, to support disadvantaged children in Iraq. All interested individuals or organizations are encouraged to submit an application to request funds for projects promoting growth and leadership among the young in the Arcola community. Recipients may include, but are not limited to, church, school, and civic organizations serving youth in our community or individuals providing services to our community. Since its inception in 2014, the Alan Roberts Fund has provided a total of $11,900 in financial support to 22 recipients, including school organizations, church, community, youth organizations, and individuals. A brief application form requests information related to recent history of expenditures for charitable and service projects, as well as the intended use for the requested funds. Forms are available at the Arcola High School office or by contacting selection committee members Janet Nackey, Julie Mills, Nancy Rarden, Jay Roberts, or Sue Stout. The next article, Drought Remains a Concern for Area Farmers, by Douglas County Agriculture by Larry Davis. So far, February weather has been better than January was in Douglas County. We've not done a lot of outside work beyond loading hay a couple of times and moving some machinery around. On a 50-degree day, we took a tractor to Arthur for repairs. We thought that was better than paying them to make multiple trips to our shop. It is raining slightly as I type this, but the immediate area continues to be in extreme drought. The moisture we got from the snow was welcome, but it did not make a dent in the precipitation deficit we've carried into the new year. I have heard a couple of weather people speak. The chances of rain increase in the spring months, but no one promises the recharge we need to get into the growing season. A presidential tweet about more soybean sales to China perked that market up somewhat. We sold part of our stored beans and part of the 2026 crop, too. The price was better, but not exactly great. South American soybean harvest has started, and that tends to put a lid on the price. Corn prices have not seen a comparable price increase. Exports remain good, but there is a lot of corn stored around the country. The U.S. Department of U.S. Treasury and Internal Revenue Service put out long-awaited updates to the 45Z tax credit for low-carbon fuels early in February. These changes were expected. I think it had limited effect on the markets. It would take several paragraphs to explain the whole low-carbon fuel program, and I will not try. The feedstocks for biofuels are scored for carbon intensity in a way they are raised, essentially the amount of greenhouse gases released in raising them. Diesel fuel and propane have a high score. Electricity has a low score, as do biofuels themselves. We have been part of a carbon scoring programs. Typically, we're asked what fuel we used in our trucks and tractors. Is it all biodiesel? So that lowers the score. The distance to the elevator is a factor, and even the number of trips over a field. I do not know where this week's EPA ruling that vacated the 2009 greenhouse gas finding leave all of this. In late January, I attended a two-day meeting sponsored by Illinois Soybean Association. ISA is a membership organization that lobbies for legislation favorable to soybean farmers. It also manages the funds generated by the soybean checkoff farmers pay on every bushel of beans they sell. By law, this money cannot be used to lobby. It is used for research into new soybean uses and development of new markets for our beans. The meeting was very informative, with speakers from industry as well as the University of Illinois. Two U of I professors talked about strategies to survive the present tough times. The ISA Director of Market Development talked about new uses and efforts to sell our soybeans in new countries. For reasons that are not really understood, South American soybeans have an average of 2% higher protein content than the U.S.-grown beans. This is significant, since protein meal and oil are the main products from soybeans. Our soybeans, however, are much higher in quality than the Southern Hemisphere beans. They're cleaner and in better condition and a better value in many cases. An importer that wants soybean to store for later use will prefer U.S. beans because of this higher quality. I had not heard this before, but Brazilian farmers often spray desiccants on their beans. These herbicides kill everything in the field and help make it easier to run the combine through the field. There will be immature soybeans of lower value in the field in the grain from these fields. The soybean harvest in South America occurs during the rainy season. Farmers often dry their beans for shipping and storage. They commonly use wood-fired dryers as opposed to the propane or natural gas dryers we have. I've never seen or used a wood-fired grain dryer, but I doubt the temperature control is particularly good. The farmers may end up with cooked beans instead of dry beans. I have attended this meeting for the last 3 years. I've always brought home some useful information for our farm. It was a chance to ask questions directly of the researchers and speakers. The weather was not particularly nice for those 2 days. I felt it was a good use of my time. Corn growers have Illinois Corn Growers Organization. The separate corn marketing board administers the corn checkoff funds. Wheat producers recently organized Illinois wheat growers to advocate for that commodity. The farmers that serve on these organizations deserve a pat on the back. They're spending a lot of their own time on behalf of all farmers. We're starting to look more to spring. We have taken the planter units out of the seed boxes in preparation to run them on a test machine for accuracy. Our corn planter has drive chains. We make 24 new ones each year from bulk chain. My brother pulled one of the lawn mowers into the shop to service it for mowing season. We try to give them the same care we give our big tractors. Our four-wheel drive tractor needs at least 2 new tires on it, and 4 would be better. Tires have gone up in price like everything else has. We will do replacement in steps. We can change small tires, but we'll let the professionals do this job. Those tires are 3 feet wide and 6 feet tall. The tractor gets fewer hours on it since we are doing more no-till. The new tires should last several years. In conventionally planted beans, there will be a fall tillage trip with a chisel plow and at least one trip in the spring to level the ground ahead of the planter. Both these trips will be done with the big tractor. In a no-till field, we just pull the planter over last year's stalks. There are many things to do before spring, and new things pop up. I make lists. The big things are easy to remember, but little jobs are easy to forget. When the weather cooperates, we want to be ready to go. Thank you for reading about agriculture in both the northern and southern hemispheres this month. The next article, group organizes to take concerns to U.S. Representative Mary Miller, February 28th in Quincy. Congresswoman Mary Miller, Republican of the 15th, recently emailed a survey to Douglas County residents asking which of five issues mattered most to them and their families. Voters were invited to check boxes on election integrity, mass deportation and border security, affordability, and eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse. Miller said in the email, "I want to hear directly from you, but some constituents noticed that checking a box without a place to comment might lead to misinterpretations about what their concerns or things, like mass deportations, were." They also noticed that Miller had hardly taken any town hall meetings in any of the counties she represents, which would allow voters to speak directly to her. To help rectify this lack of communication, the group of volunteers are organizing a visit to Quincy on Saturday, February 28th from 12 noon to 2 p.m. to drop off letters or just bring signs that help them answer the question that Miller asked. Residents of Douglas County are invited to join them on Saturday, February 28th. For more information, contact Wendy Martin at 309-369-4728. The next article is from the Ramblin' Man, Dave Porter, Imagining the Market Process for New Medicines. "I've wondered how marketing teams come up with the sales strategies for those medicines you see advertised on TV, the ones with names you can't spell or pronounce that treat ailments you've never heard of. The patients take huge risks of horrible side effects, including death, so they can go parasailing or hang gliding to lead fuller, richer lives. I imagine it goes something like this. Okay, guy, the boss wants us to market this placebo directly to consumers. Let's get busy. Isn't placebo just a sugar pill? Aren't these do-nothing pills used in clinical studies so people don't know if they're getting test medication? Yes, Brad, we're producing them already, but nobody's buying them in the pharmacies. The market is wide open. But won't that create a higher demand, causing the price to go up? Yes, that's what we're hoping for. But it's not an effective drug. They're cheap, and so that's cost-effective. Plus, we can use data from clinical studies from actual medicines, so we don't have to pay for any studies of our own. Compared to the cost of other drugs, we can get the price down 200%, 600%, 1,000%. Doesn't that mean we'd have to pay people to take the pills? No, Brad, this is new math. Get with the program. But people know what a placebo is. They're not going to buy that. That's why we need a new name. Let's start there. Sacrum officiarum is a Latin name for sugarcane. That's great, Linda. I like that. What's the chemical compound? According to Google, it's a sucrose, a disaccharide with the chemical formula C12H22O11. Okay, scratch off sucrose. People know what that is. I like the word disaccharide, though. Sounds very painful. Let's keep that. I think I need a compound number and their problem, but let's keep the CHO on the board to incorporate that into a brand name. After small group discussions, the name choxaminitine is proposed. It's a little long. What's your thinking on that? Well, it has the CHO that you wanted, plus the required X and Y. We need either sound tine or ox suffix to make it sound medicine-y. So where does the Jimmy come from? Jimmy came up with that name. So how do you pronounce it? Never mind, it doesn't matter. People don't trust words they can pronounce. Let's shorten to chox to time, and we'll pronounce it chox hyatim. What are the benefits? The number one benefit is that we get bonuses this year. It improves lives, not just their lives. It helps hospitals, too, because our cost is so low, we're going to get a full 50% kickback from the retail price. Come on, guys, this is ridiculous. This pill doesn't do anything. Brad, you're off the team. Well, it doesn't do any harm. That's right, Linda. Doing no harm is a benefit. I looked at the data, and 35% of people taking placebos experienced negative side effects. That's good, Steve. So 65% of the people who took our drug saw no negative side effects in clinical studies. Write that down. 1 in 20 died. Ah, so death is a potential side effect. Excellent work, Tracy. People love to take drugs that could kill them. Get the autopsy data for the people who died, and while you're at it, let's look at the autopsies of the people who didn't die. Also, let's add diarrhea and heart disease as potential side effects. Higher risk means higher rewards. Have placebos actually caused any of those side effects? Not that I know of. That's why we say potential, possible, and may cause. Besides, causation and correlation are two different things. I don't know what that means. Nobody does. Oh, it means that just because two things happen at the same time, one didn't necessarily cause the other. It means you can shut up, Brad. Why are you still here? There's no science to support your claims. We're marketers, Brad, not scientists. If you want science, build yourself a time machine and go back to 2008. Security. Okay, let's roll out the campaign with the new language from legal. Do you suffer from insomnia, backache, migraines, gonorrhea, brain worms, cold sores, or acne? Ask your doctor about cloxacillin, disaccharide. Used in more than 4,000 clinical studies, 65% of the people who took choxaminitine lived fuller, richer lives. Don't take Choxlim-Theme if you're allergic to Choxlim-Theme, pregnant, or planning on becoming pregnant, nursing, breathing, or past your ACTs. Cloxamine may cause serious side effects on unborn children. Other possible side effects may include vomiting, diarrhea, depression, suicidal thoughts, death, heart disease, higher insurance premiums, finger boo-boos, liver disease, hair loss, measles, and higher profits for us. Stop taking Choxlim-Theme if you turn purple or experience extra toes growing out of your elbows. Fantastic. Let's scrap the hang gliding and parasailing imagery, though. Ultimate fighting is what it's about today. Let's buy a UFC endorsement and get it out there. And the next article, old clothes that describe my life to a T. So there I was, by Pete Buckley. I have a walk-in closet with a copious amount of space for hanging up clothes, and this closet also has shelves for placing folded clothing. Every hanger is filled with a shirt, sweatshirt, pants, or polo shirt. Every shelf is bursting at the seams with t-shirts, folded sweaters, and shorts. In addition, there are bins stuffed with underwear, socks, handkerchiefs, and other miscellaneous junk. With all these clothing options, you might think I could go years without ever wearing the same clothing twice. You would be wrong. It turns out that I probably wear only 10 to 15 items out of the hundreds of items of clothing placed in my closet. During the summer months, I generally live off of one of five different pairs of shorts or blue jeans combined with one of 10 t-shirts or short-sleeve polo shirts. In the winter, I end up wearing one of many pairs of jeans that I have, one of my summer t-shirts, and one of my five warm pullovers. Throughout the year, there are times I might wear a button-down, long-sleeve shirt, but this is not very often. My wife has gently suggested I part with a ton of never-worn clothing that is taking up most of the room in my closet. In my effort to make Kathy happy, I removed a warehouse full of t-shirts from my closet and placed them on the floor. I looked at all those old tees and thought to myself that I'd probably have a good reason to hang onto some of those pieces for nostalgia. After all, these t-shirts remind me of trips that Kathy and I have made to Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, Black Mountain, North Carolina, Durango, Colorado, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, Monterey, California, Chimney Rock, North Carolina, the Adirondack Mountain Range, Mackinac Island, Michigan, Yellowstone National Park, Lake Placid, New York, Indian Rocks Beach, Florida, San Diego, California, and dozens of other scenic places. By glancing at these short-sleeve wonders, I remember running road races such as the Superior Trail 50 Miler, the Bank of America Shamrock Shuffle, the Trooper Thompson 781 Memorial Run, the 7th Annual St. Joe 5K, the 2013 Broom Court Festival 5K, the 2013 Arthur Cheese Festival Rat Race, the OSF Healthcare Illinois 5K in 2018, and the 1998 One-Half Marathon hosted by the North Shore Chicago. I even have a t-shirt that identifies me as an event leader for the American Cancer Society Relay for Life. Without these t-shirts, how could I possibly recall that I spent time in Qatar and Iraq while working for the U.S. Department of Justice's Regime Crime Liaison Office, or that I attended Western Illinois University, or that I supported Baylor University's 2010 NCAA Sweet 16 performance, and I cheer for my granddaughters at St. Joseph Middle School. Some shirts I've kept because they tickle my funny bone, such as the shirt previously claimed Stinkies, previously Fresh House of Fish, quality you can smell, or the shirt which reads, Taco Cat spelled backwards is Taco Cat, and another shirt with a picture of a spoon beneath the words Serial Killer. Of course, there's a shirt with a picture of George Armstrong Custer on the front, followed by the words, Uh-oh, above the date June 5th, 1876. Other t-shirts remind me of places I worked as an FBI agent, a Royal Canadian Mounted Police, RCMP shirt that I got when working at the U.S. Embassy in Ottawa, Canada, after the events of 9/11, the Joint Task Force on Gangs t-shirt, the Chicago Police Department t-shirt. Some of these t-shirts broadcast my one-time love for the Chicago Bulls. One such shirt is a copy of the front page of the Chicago Tribune, which reads, Tremendous. Paxton hits winning three-point shot over the Suns 99-98. Without a t-shirt advertising that I am bald and majestic, how would I know that I'm bald and majestic? And what about my army dress blue uniform wrapped in cellophane that I haven't worn, nor can I fit into, for over 40 years? Many of the t-shirts I described are worn and threadbare, and some even have holes in the shirt. I don't think the Goodwill will consider accepting these shirts as a donation. So what have I done with these fossil pieces of clothing? Why, I fold them very neatly and place them back in my closet. And that is all the time for we have this week. This is Chris Yerkes. Say goodbye and see you again next week.